Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that our hosts sometimes send charts they're talking about directly to the Radio Plus app? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Sri Kumar with us from TCW, Trust Company of the West, as we look at the American economy. Sri, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. Good to be on your program again.
You've been one looking for disinflation, if not outright deflation. You've talked about true economic contraction. Do you stand by a recession call?
I still stand by that call, Tom. Keep in mind that despite the retail sales number that we have, we still have a high unemployment rate. The job creation is mainly on the part-time side, not on the full-time side, both of which I think are contributing to the fact that demand is likely to be restrained on the consumer side. And you talked about an hour ago, as I was driving in, I heard you on Bloomberg Radio talk about the person with $141,000 in his bank account and what is that person going to do. That person is squeezed by low interest rates, and I maintain that you have a situation with a QE1, QE2, and the so-called financial repression, which is actually delaying the economic recovery rather than giving rise to it. And final point, you still have the influence from Europe, which is still being felt. And when the headwind finally hits the United States, I think you're going to have a dip in the GDP on the U.S. side. The note that everywhere else, when you look at Japan, where the growth has been disappointing, Chinese export growth in July substantially slower than in June, and the fact that inflation is not a problem in China or even in India, the inflation rate is coming down. So you have signs everywhere in the globe. The question is, when does it finally reach the U.S. shores? Is it next month or 6 months from now?
So the people who have been bidding up the likes of Toll Brothers and KB Home, and I just noticed USG is up 77% on the year. These people are making a big mistake.
They're not necessarily making a mistake, Ken. I think when you look at housing, and despite the mixed picture that we have today with housing starts down and building permits up, for instance, a couple of minutes ago, you do have some mixed signs coming through. So housing has been in a decline for several years, and I think it is clearly stabilizing. It is not going to be a big contributor to growth. It is not going to be a contributor to a further decline. So all the house builders that you're talking about and ones who are benefiting, probably rightly so. And eventually, as inflation replaces the deflation that I look for the short term, the housing stocks should do very well indeed.
You look at the price move here, and I don't hear anybody really talking about a lot of inflation right now except for the hawks at the Fed. How will the chairman respond to Sri Kumar disinflation or deflation?
I think the chairman's reaction is going to be whether to make a clear announcement August 31st and in his Jackson Hole speech regarding a coming of a QE3 or not, and what the Fed does at its next meeting, September 12th and 13th, Tom. Obviously, we know they are not going to act at the end of October. It would be too close to the presidential elections. So the chairman's decision is going to be, should he act on August 31st and September 12th and 13th, or should he postpone that announcement to December? I think a QE3 is coming, and it's just a matter of timing, whether it's going to be September or December, that it happens.
Kamal, I like your attention to the real economy, whether it's Europe or the United States. Would you say in general, when we analyze things, we don't pay enough attention to what's going on in the real economy?
I think that's true. I think the markets get fixated on two things, Tom. The latest information moves the market one way or the other. And the second is people are used to valuation of equities or bonds, almost divorced from what is happening in the macroeconomic developments. Because that's, I think, traditionally the way it has been. And the change to the importance of macro, I think, became much more important 2008 and since. So still, I think we continue on without taking the macro background fully into effect, which is why, in my opinion, the fact that the Eurozone has gone into a recession in the second quarter And the UK, despite a positive retail sales number which came out today, still seems to be weak. When you put it all together, the largest economic unit in the world has gone into a double dip recession, UK plus the Eurozone. And given that, you have to take into account that Chinese growth is slowing, emerging market growth is slowing everywhere. You have news from Brazil, you have news from Russia, Mexico, all of which are suggesting slower growth, which is why I think equity investors in the United States should pay heed and realize that the U.S. is not going to be an island compared with all of that, especially since the U.S. is now a smaller economic unit than the European Union.
So then what do we do, stash our money in T-bills and just wait?
No, T-bills don't work because as you and Tom have been talking, Ken, the yields are very low. You're not going to save for your retirement. You're not going to beat inflation if you're going to do that. What I think you're going to do is to look for defensive investments that are still high-yielding dividend stocks, which I think are going to give you good returns. And now the 10-year Treasury is 179.60 right now. And I believe because of my economic weakness thesis that the yield is still headed down. And you've been talking with your guests regarding whether the fixed income is in a bubble. But yes, it is in a bubble. The bubble will get bigger. That's one way you're going to get a return in the short term. And second, you see that despite all of the expectations for global growth picking up, gold price is still remaining quite restrained at around 1600. And my expectation is because of the disinflation, gold is likely to go down in price. That is a second play that you can make. And third, as I keep repeating, there is a lot of distress in the world. So if you're going to save for your retirement, if you're looking 5, 7, 10 years ahead, you should be putting a part of your money with a good manager looking at distressed investments around the world so that you don't get liquidity, but you get a good return over a period of time.
Okay. Well, I like that. And that sounds like a consistent theme that Ken and I are hearing. But the real theme that's out there is the great distortion. I would still like to know, you have an outlier call on disinflation and deflation. How is Chairman Bernanke going to respond to that? Besides, as Julia Coronado puts it, QEX or Noriel says QE3, QE4, QE5. There's got to be a response to disinflation.
The response to disinflation is it makes it easier for the chairman to start a QE3.
Yes.
So that's you were going to say something.
No, please, go ahead.
Yeah. So in other words, if inflation were perking up right now, and if the recent inflation number, the headline CPI was unchanged in July for the second month in a row, that makes it easier to say unemployment is still a problem, inflation is not a problem, I'm going to have a QE3. So I think from a monetary policy framework, it seems to be natural for him to react that way. My concern is, that may not push up inflation in the short term because the money is going to sit with banks, it's going to sit with investors rather than get spent. It creates the potential for future inflation. That's one problem. Second problem is you are in a Keynesian liquidity trap, and that in turn means that it is not going to stimulate the economy. And this goes back to your earlier discussion about what the small saver is going to do. The small saver is not participating in the spending. And as long as that is the case, there is no inflation and there is no big growth.
So do we hear about this in September at the next federal policy meeting or later on?
It seems to me, Ken, increasingly as something postponed to December rather than done in September. I was looking for September, but because of the mixed economic news we have been getting in the last week to 10 days, including the fact that industrial production is doing well, Empire State Survey is not doing so well, combined all of that, I think the Fed will opt to wait until year-end. Obviously, it's not going to act in October either.
No, but I think that's a real headline thing that Sri doesn't see that.
Yeah, and that's interesting because that means it would collide with the fiscal cliff, right?
It would collide with the fiscal cliff. The chairman would probably continue to make requests for the Congress to act on it, as he has been doing repeatedly. But I don't believe the Congress is going to listen to the Fed chairman regarding what they are going to do. So it really would put the Fed in a dilemma. Are they going to independently go ahead and do a QE3 to offset the negative effect of a fiscal cliff? because the fiscal side is not going to listen to the monetary side.
Let's review this again. Why won't they act in September?
The reason for not acting in September is the pressure that you get from the mixed set of numbers. As you know, the Fed is divided regarding mm-hmm. some people wanting to ease, the other people not wanting to ease. So if it is easy for them to say nothing much is going to happen between September and December, we'll have a bit more of economic information. The political data point of November 6th will be over, so we'll be able to take a more informed decision
right.
in what, December than we can in September.
Sri, what is your first quarter 2013? Ken, I'm still not used to this. I hate saying the word 2013.
Right.
Just so you know. What is your first quarter GDP call?
Well, it's since the given the fact that the fiscal cliff, I think, will have a negative impact, whether they solve it soon after November or not. So my best call at this time, Tom, would be about -1% for the first quarter GDP for the United States.
And that's the big, big change, folks. You see Sri there at -1. Consensus even coming down. I know John Sylvia and Tom Percelli, very, very cautious on first quarter.
Yeah.
And this is the first I've heard of this. Wait through September, obviously October, and wait till January.
Now, is that -1? How are you betting on the fiscal cliff then to get that -1%?
I'm betting on saying that the fiscal cliff doesn't get resolved until November 6th. And it's something, depending on who wins the election, either a re-elected President Obama then acts on it along with the Congress before year end. If it is a President-elect Romney, then we have to wait until January for any movement. In either case, there is some form of resolution, Ken, in the month of December, but it comes too late to avoid all the uncertainty, the consumer postponing it, and the business investments getting delayed. Think August 5th, 2011, with the downgrade of the United States. It didn't do much in terms of U.S. interest rates. U.S. yields actually went down, Ken. What it did was that increased the element of uncertainty as far as business investments are concerned. That, I think, is a big negative effect of the fiscal cliff, whether the solution happens in December or whether it happens in January or February.
Sri, thank you so much.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.